This is Blood and Firewater, a true crime comedy discussion type podcast. We shoot tequila and we chase away a case of murder. Just as a disclaimer, this podcast contains mature content not suitable for all ages, so listener's discretion is advised. I am your host, Rashad, and I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning into the show. We promise not to be insensitive to the victims and respect their families. However, we will poke fun at other persons, places, and things involved with the case. We're not professionals, and we don't pretend to be. So my last light bill was before the one I got now was like $70. And I was like, okay, cool. $70, knock it out. And then the one I got this month was $144 and change. And like, you know you got a really big power bill when you look at the change. You know what I'm saying?
Do you round up or down?
It hits different. I saw the 73 cents and I was like, really? Really? Like, you saw my power bill last month and then y'all included the change.
You were goddamn right.
I feel some type of way because it wasn't because of the fact that I don't know where the power went, to be honest with you.
You don't know where the power went?
No, I don't. I really don't know where the power went.
Did you check underneath your bed?
I looked directly underneath the bed.
How did that?
Didn't find any lost power.
No power down there?
No.
Did you do laundry? Did you check your pockets?
I did actually substantially subconsciously. Maybe. I did a lot more laundry than I thought I did. So maybe the power company's like, hey, you did some laundry in your dreams, and we're going to charge you for that. Bro.
Those are power dreams.
Brainstorms. And they're charging you for them. So they're charging you for the things that you think about doing in your sleep.
Exactly.
So you wake up, and your debit card's like, hey, you spent $40 on Amazon. Just because you thought about some shit. Are you serious? Like, is that where we're going?
That's how it works now. They know what you want.
Like, I think that's the future. Right there. Like, if we didn't predict something just now, and it's documented.
You said do what now? It's docu what now?
Documented.
I'm sorry, please go on. I just was ready for
documented. No, like that's pretty much where we're going right now. It's just like it's already a thing where you really just don't have to even go outside to go grocery shopping. We made it like in a year we figured out how to facilitate millions of jobs to just be from home.
In a year. Some people not going back at all.
And here we are talking about
documented.
Things are documented. Amazon wish list. And then like spending money in your sleep.
And power drink.
That's the next step. That is it. So I hope you're ready. Like they already have grocery carts that I don't even know why people even just go to the grocery store anymore.
You don't enjoy, like, the time out? You don't like the grocery store?
Coming from, like, a perspective where I know what I'm going to go get, sure.
Right.
Like, I got a list.
You checked it twice.
Things are written down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go get these things. But, like, if you go in there and free ball, oh, man. Oh, just man.
Go in there, dick swinging.
You done fucked up $200 and all you got is chips. Like, little bags, big bags, party bags, and pistachios, and like milk and bacon.
And that's like $80 right there. I went to Ingles today, actually, and I was looking for Boar's Head bacon because I was like, hey, it's Father's Day. I would really like some really good bacon. So I went to the grocery store. I found some Boar's Head bacon, and then I found some more bacon, and then I bought that bacon and some more bacon. So it was like $20 worth of bacon. And then...
Wait, back up. Now, were you planning on eating all of this on Father's Day?
No, I ate one pack of it already.
You ate a whole pack of bacon today?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure.
I mean, what? I'm
how off...
I don't eat bacon.
You have to... One must eat bacon to appreciate bacon.
That's true.
You don't eat it? Like, I get that. I go to town on some bacon. So, like, I found out Boar's Head made bacon. And I was like, what? Because Boar's Head makes bomb-ass meat. And, yeah, so, like, I bought a pack. And I was like, all right. Father's Day, I'm going to go get me a blue cheeseburger from Ingles. You know, get all the fixings. You know, your lettuce, tomato, pickles, onions, stuff like that. And then I'm going to eat that motherfucker. And then that was it. Like, Father's Day in a nutshell. I mean, I got a card. I appreciate that. I got some gifts before, you know, Father's Day. Because, like, everybody, like, predicted it was going to, like, monsoon. And it did. Which was crazy. The rain shut Father's Day down.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, whatever. By the way, happy Father's Day to, well, just happy belated Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Fortunately enough, we're talking about somebody who didn't have the privilege to do that. Welcome to Blood and Fire Water. Welcome to Blood and Fire Water. I'm your host, Rashad. Over there is Jay.
Hello.
And we're on part three, the finale of David Berkowitz. So we ended the last part with the eighth and final shooting. As a recap, let's go over the attacks in order. Our killer, under the self-proclaimed Son of Sam, had struck in the Bronx and Queens 8 times in 9 months during 1976 and 77. With a .44 Bulldog revolver. Number 1, July 19th, 1976, in the Bronx. Don LaLoria, an emergency medical technician, 18, and her friend Jody Valenti, a nurse, 19, shot. Donna was killed instantly. No description of the killer. Number 2, October 23rd, 1976, Queens. Paul Denario, a Citibank security guard, 20, and Rosemary Keenan, a Queens College student, 18. Both survived, but no description of the killer. Number 3, November 27th, 1976, in Queens. Two high school students, Donna DeMasi, 16, and Joanna Lamino, 18. 5 shots were fired. Lamino was left paralyzed. Number 4, January 30th, 1977, in Queens. Christine Freund, a secretary, 26, and her fiance, John Deal, a bartender, 30, 3 shots. Freund later dies at the hospital because of her injuries. No description of the killer. Number 5, March 8th, 1977, Queens. Columbia student Virginia Voskarichian, 19, shot while walking home from school. 1 shot at close range was fired and she was killed instantly. Number 6. This is rough. This is number 6. April 17th, 1977, Bronx. Alexander Esau. Esau? Esau, a tow truck driver operator, 20, and Valentina Suriani, a Lehman College student, and an aspiring actress and model 18 shot. Three shots were fired. Sirianni died at the scene and Esau died at the hospital several hours later. Then we talked about the correspondence between the killer and the police addressed to NYPD Captain Joseph Borelli through a letter that was left at the scene of the last attack. And the newspaper's daily news columnist Jimmy Breslin's letter that he sent directly to him. Then he signs the letters under various names and a symbol, a male and a female sign with an S and an X with a circle, and it was complicated. I'm gonna just smooth right on past that. At this point, he's killed four women and a man. Characteristics that they all had in common were all four women had long brown hair. There's about five sketches of the killer, all different. And two letters, handwritten and delivered by the killer himself, that have been scoured by the Omega Task Force, which included 50 different detectives from boroughs all over New York. 50. Like, usually there's one or two. There's 50 on this. Fuck it. Number 7. Because I wasn't done with the attacks yet. Number 7. June 26, 1977 in Queens. Sal Lupo, a mechanics helper, 20, and Judy Placido, a recent high school graduate, 17, shot. Three shots were fired. Both survived the attack. Then, something magical happened. New York blacked out. Not all magic is good magic. I mean, we already talked about the fact that this was fucking Fear City. The New York blackout didn't help. Like, did you ever hear about that? Like, ever? Mm-mm. In history? What? Mm-mm. Okay, so New York blacked out for like 2 days. Like you remember there was a blackout like in recent history? Like there was like this power grid up north that went out and it knocked out everybody's power, but like it wasn't like that big of a deal.
Mm-mm.
What? Okay. Okay, so.
Oh, you mean like when the lights turn off?
That's the same thing.
Right.
It's a blackout.
Yeah.
Okay. So There was a blackout in the 70s.
Yes.
And why are you acting like you know what I'm talking about all of a sudden? Like,
okay. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
No.
Go ahead, man.
Okay, so there's a blackout in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the time there was a dude rolling around with a big ass gun, just like letting him go.
Mm-hmm.
So creepy. But like people were out like stealing shit. It's fine. Like I said, not all magic is good magic. And we already talked about the vandalism, the arson, and it was basically the purge going on. No. For New York in July.
I don't know about that because he was the only one that was really like just out there killing people.
Number 8. July 31st, 1977 in Brooklyn. Stacy Mouth. Fuck.
Stacy. You got some kind of hangout.
Stacy Mouskowitz, a secretary, and Robert Violante, a clothing store salesman, both 20. Four rounds were fired, striking both in the head and killing Mouskowitz later from her injuries. Violante lost sight in one eye and partial in the other. So, needless to say, he didn't see anything. So on that particular night of the Violante shooting and the Mouskowitz shooting, while the killer was on the prowl and police were not so much hot on his trail, but they were doing their job, one particular officer was out writing tickets, and this particular officer ticketed a four-door Ford Galaxy, the killer's car. But they did not know that was his car. Yet. The car was ticketed because he was parked too close to a fire hydrant in front of 290 Bay 17th Street. So then, ballistics came back and they were able to determine that the gun being used in all of the shootings was a Charter Arms 44 caliber revolver. The police were under extreme pressure to close the case. One detective went on to say, quote, "We know less now than we knew yesterday." So, like, realistically, if, let's say you were just walking down the street, you know, you and the boys.
just walking down the street.
I don't know what y'all are doing. And then, there's a police officer standing there, and you're like, "Hey, there's a serial killer on the loose. What are y'all doing about it?" And he's like, "We don't know anything. As a matter of fact, we know less than we knew yesterday."
We know less than we knew yesterday?
Yes.
That's the answer.
That's the response. Like, we knew some stuff yesterday, and then we don't know that anymore.
Did only one person know it, and they just left? When five?
Hey. So, in my opinion, I feel like the police department did not want to make a fool of themselves is the point I'm trying to make. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were like, "Hey, we don't know nothing at all, but we're trying to figure it out. But we don't know what we knew."
That's tough. That's really tough to say to somebody. Especially about somebody that's killing people.
At this point in time, the city is paying $90,000 a day to investigate these attacks and the capture of the Son of Sam. 75 full-time detectives and 225 beat cops are working on the case, and over 3,165 suspects have been investigated and interviewed. 85% of those officers work nights to match the killer's modus operandi. A reward of $20,000 was offered for information leading to the arrest of the killer. A hotline was set up for information and received over 200 calls a day.
You said 200 calls a day?
It was said that, like, the phone never stopped ringing. Like, I might get called. My phone might ring, actually ring, twice a day. One of them's like scam likely.
Mr. Popular, I see you.
So then an eyewitness came forward. Cecilia Davis was walking her dog at the scene of the Moskowitz and Violante shooting and saw a man walking like a cat holding a gun. Saw the officer ticket the car, that, you know, the fire hydrant thing. Saw her dog take shit. saw everything.
Okay.
The thing about it is, she waited like nine, or not nine, she waited like 4 days to come forward with that information. But once she did, the hunt was on for every car that was ticketed in that area, and they hit on a cream-colored Ford Galaxy, tag number 561 XLB, that belonged to David Berkowitz. Here's where police are sitting there thinking, all eight of these attacks, like all these people getting shot, they're like, "Oh, dude, he's got to be crazy. He's got to be like some kind of serial genius or whatever." And then my man gets a parking ticket. He drove his car. Nobody else's car. To the thing. To the shooting. Like, blank, 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 blank. And, like, but that was his car. Like, come on, man. Very, very convincing. Like, I guess, like, you know, the simplest Occam's razor explanation is the simplest. That's fine. Like I'm willing to believe that like that's one of the simplest mistakes that a serial killer can make is like parking in front of a fire hydrant in New York, because like it happens. So I think the detective at the time, his name was Falatico. He called Yonkers PD because that's the address on the summons for court on the ticket. He asked the dispatch if they knew anything about a guy named David Berkowitz. And the dispatcher at the time just so happened to be a woman named Wheat Carr. She lived right in front of David Berkowitz. And he had also shot their dog. Just saying.
The doggo?
No, he shot their... David Berkowitz shot their dog.
That's what I'm saying. The doggo. What?
The dog.
Doggo?
Yeah, he shot the... Doggo?
Yeah, never mind. Just...
It wasn't the family dog. It was more like the dad's dog of the family. The dog's name was Harvey. Just putting that out there. But the father's name was Sam.
The dog's name was Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
Harvey.
Harvey. The dad's name was Sam. Sam. Berkowitz also, you know, wrote several threatening letters and began arsoning up around the neighborhood and then murdering people in the name of Sam.
I'm sorry, it was just Sam.
So the police are like, all right, let's just go check out this Berkowitz guy. Like, maybe he's the guy we're looking for. And, you know, there's 300 plus guys working on the case. I'm sure there's like 2, 3, 4 guys. Like, hey, go check out the Berkowitz car. Like, we know where he's at. Like, just go check it out. And they go and do a routine check. They spot the car upon the address that it's supposed to be at, miraculously. And upon a visual check from outside of the vehicle, they spot the butt of a gun sticking out of a gunny sack.
Out of a who sack?
A gunny sack. I don't, like, and when I heard it, I was like, hey.
A gunny sack.
Hey. Hey. You know?
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, in particular police fashion, I'm not saying all cops, just in some jurisdictions or some manners of police work, they break into your car. And they broke into this car without a search warrant. And they go into the glove compartment. And they find a letter that was written by the son of Sam, allegedly. And they also find a machine gun. All of this evidence was illegally seized and, you know, wouldn't be admissible in court. But, like, hey.
A machine gun under the seat?
Yeah, he was strapped. So the police spot a fellow comrade police officer named Craig Glassman coming out of the building. And they ask him, hey, you know David Berkowitz? He's like, as a matter of fact, I do. And they were like, could you point him out for us? Please. Because we think he's the fucking son of Sam, because there's all this evidence over here in this car. And he's like, oh, Lord. So around 8:30, Berkowitz moses out to his car. Glassman's like, that's the guy. He gets out, he pulls a training day, and stops Berkowitz before he can pull out. Gun drawn, on his haunches, yells, fucking freeze. And the whole time I'm thinking, how great was it for, you know, the police officers and David Berkowitz to find two parking spaces in front of their building at the same time?
That's what you're focused on.
So he yells freeze because I guess back in the day, that shit worked. And they ask him if he's David Berkowitz. And he's like, quote, no, I'm the son of Sam. And you got me. Unquote. The largest manhunt in New York City history was over right there. Like, just over a parking ticket and a suspect kind of being shady. It's a little fishy. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's like catching Osama bin Laden in New York right after 9/11. He's like, oh shit, you got me. Okay, maybe not Osama bin Laden. Let's say not Osama bin Laden. Not Osama bin Laden. It's like the equivalent though. Like, I don't think if you would have caught him in any, like, because they caught him like in a bungalow with like four litter boxes around him and a couple Samsung flat screens and an iPad. I don't know. Well, like, he was doing work though. I guess, I don't know. But then they walked in and ended his whole career. So if you sit there and tell me like, all my man had to do is be like, yep, I did it. Like, that's all they went off of? Like, that's it? Like, a self-confession? Like, I questioned as soon as I heard, like, while watching several documentaries, I questioned ballistics testing. Was his hands checked for gunpowder residue? Or something like that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there should be some remnants, like, something. And
was it?
Well, gunpowder residue, I don't think that became a thing until, like, later. Like, DNA wasn't really just, like, a thing until, like, the 80s. So, in the 70s, gunpowder residue probably was not something to do. But, a big fucking deal. And, I mean, he confessed. He said he did it. Like, he said, I'm the son of Sam. He had the 44 on him at the time of arrest. The ballistics from the gun matched the most recent shooting. How they were able to test that in the first couple of hours of him being arrested, I don't know. They found letters in his car matching the handwriting of previous letters, but that doesn't mean he wrote them. I'm not going to go off on that. He literally said that he was the son of Sam. Like, I can't stress that enough. New York
why do you make it seem like that bothers you?
All you had to do is just say that. It doesn't make sense.
People confess, but all the time.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it true.
Oh, you got me there.
Okay, so his apartment was at 35 Pine Street in Yonkers. Police described it as quote-unquote squalid. Drawings all over the walls, a single mattress on the floor surrounded by the lowest of pornography. Whatever that means.
Oh, you know what that means.
The lowest of pornography?
The lowest.
What is the lowest?
You know what I'm talking about. What is the lowest? You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, what is the lowest of, like, I wrote that in quotations for some, like, because I knew I was like,
come
the
on,
lowest
you know,
of pornography.
You know there's mid, and you know there's high. He was at the low. You know what I mean?
It's like dog born.
I'm talking low, Rashad. Like low, Rashad.
You're literally looking at
scat porn, bro.
Felching.
Felching?
Mm-hmm.
I know what edging is. I don't know what felching is.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Okay. Why do you know?
Just don't.
Okay.
So, also in David Berkowitz's apartment, they were able to find his journals, which were filled with very specific details of over 1,400 arsons committed around the New York City area. To me, he seems like a fall guy. Like, it seems like everything in that house was planted and meticulously placed, and like whatever nuance that you could, like a detective would feed into, was there, and like they just knew what they would look for. Like it everything just seemed planted. Like I'll put pictures of his room on our Instagram and like I'll show you, but like everything just seems so planted.
So like okay, so, by the police?
I mean, no, not by the police, but like it just seems like he wanted to be caught. He was the fall guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like he was the guy that was supposed to be the guy that did it, but he wasn't the guy.
You're not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy.
You know what I'm saying? It's almost like he did it, so you're not actually looking for the guy that actually did it kind of thing. Yeah, he might go to jail for the rest of his life, but like he may not ever have to worry about anything ever again in his life. Whatever. One of those kind of situations. Like that's I've seen enough gangster movies for me to recognize when, you know, you got a fall guy. He was the fucking fall guy, whatever. You know, after the arrest or whatever, it was a media spectacle. And like there's a lot of criticism about how Berkowitz, you know, he had like this grin or this smile. To be honest with you, like if you listen to part one and part two, like the guy was never seen or he never was paid attention to. So like you gotta understand, for somebody to be in the spotlight for at least those 15 seconds, he's gonna crack a smile. It wasn't the fact that he was smiling, but like it also looks like he's hiding something. I remember saying like, hey, don't watch the Netflix thing. Don't watch that yet. Now watch it. And then like pause it and come back to this because like this shit's crazy. So upon interrogation, after the fact, upon arrest, all of the task force immediately started celebrating and getting drunk. After Berkowitz got arrested, they were like, we got him. Job's done. We're not looking for nobody else. We got Berkowitz. We're done. Fuck it. Berkowitz confessed that, quote unquote, Sam was a 6,000-year-old entity speaking through a man named Sam Carr's dog named Harvey. The dog he shot previously thought he killed and then came back to life. All right. Coincidentally. Coincidentally, the expression Sons of Sam was introduced to him during his stint in the military while overseas. You know, Uncle Sam fighting the war, Sons of Sam, whatever. There's that. He brings it back stateside, and he's a son of Sam, fighting the good fight in domestic terrorism fashion. By the way, just in case you didn't remember, none of the sketches matched Berkowitz whatsoever. None of them. Not one. And it's crazy how out of 13 victims, 6 killed and 7 injured, almost everybody saw what the guy looked like and everybody's depiction of the guy is different. Even the mayor at the time of the arrest was like,
you're not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy.
But they called a guy. So
they got somebody.
So police are like, let's follow up on this 6,000-year-old dog spirit demon thing living in this black Labrador back behind the Berkowitz place in this guy named Sam Carr house. And Sam Carr and everybody at the Carr residence were not taking any questions from anyone anytime soon. Not the police, not the papers, not anyone. If you had any questions for the Carr residence, please feel free to ask them to yourself in the car on the way back to where the fuck you came from. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody but Wheat Carr, the police dispatcher that answered the call about Berkowitz. She said some shit. But the police were not bothered by it at all. They were like, hey, we got him. Case closed. We're done. 86 the task force. Let's start popping bottles. Let's start giving out awards. The NYPD just made American history by catching the most prolific serial killer at the time with a parking ticket. And he was arraigned in Brooklyn at Kings County Hospital early August 11th, 1977, after quickly confessing to all of the shootings after a 6,000-year-old demon dog told him to do it for blood in exchange for nothing.
I don't think negotiations work like that, do they?
I mean, the dog obviously drove a hard bargain.
Yeah.
Needless to say, he was given 30 days of testing to determine his mental competency.
Hmm.
During one of these psychological evaluations, David Berkowitz is recorded explaining why he committed the murders and the attacks. Quote, "I had nothing against these victims. Who were these people to me? They were just people, you know. They didn't, I didn't hate them. I wasn't angry against them. Well, Sam did it through me. The dog demon thing, you know, 6,000 year old, whatever. Mm-hmm. He used me. He made me go out there and do it. I did it for him, for blood." Now, the police have a suspect. They have a weapon. They have a confession. They have a weird motive. Unheard of in any of the cases that we've talked about this season. Because if true, the dog was talking to him. Obviously, it wasn't. But if it was, crazy. This is by far the craziest one.
Well, we can't say for sure that the dog wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying the dog wasn't.
You just did.
Like, I feel like people automatically assume the dog wasn't talking to him.
But you literally just said it wasn't. Like just now.
Mm-hmm.
You said that.
I said if it was, but it wasn't. I backtracked.
What do you mean?
I backpedaled, I mean.
That means that you don't think it was talking to him.
I didn't say it wasn't, but if it was.
What you said.
This is the craziest case. That's what I said. Okay. I literally said, like, I didn't say the dog. Okay. Are you seriously saying that the dog was talking to him?
It may
like,
have.
You want.
I mean, I'm a multiple person.
You want to make the argument. Thing. You want to make the argument that he was talking to a 6,000-year-old spirit through a dog.
Well, I'm going to make the argument that I believe that he was.
Oh, okay, so that makes this the craziest case.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then that's the argument that we're fighting for the same thing.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, because on September 19th, 1977, Berkowitz changed his story. It wasn't the dog. He made that up, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he had accomplices, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Other sons of Sam. So by this time, after three separate mental health exams determining if he was competent enough to stand trial and such, which he did, May 8th of 1978 rolls around and Berkowitz's defense is like, please, please, plead for insanity. Plead for not guilty. Save yourself. There's no way you did this by yourself. There's no way. Like, just buy us some time. Like, if you plead guilty, you're not going to get a trial. That's how pleading guilty works. And realistically, in my mind, there's no way he pulled off all of these attacks by himself. No fucking way. No way. I don't believe it. So Berkowitz appeared in court that day, cool as a cucumber, and he pled guilty to all of the shooting. At the sentencing, 2 weeks later, Berkowitz tried to jump out of a window and caught one of the murdered victims a whore, and he killed her again. Further psychiatric evaluations preceded this event, and Berkowitz was still found fit to withstand trial. On June 12, 1978, David Berkowitz was sentenced to 25 years to life for each of the murders, to be served consecutively at the Attica Correctional Facility in upstate New York. He's moved around since then. I know, like, you want to write him a letter, look at it yourself. With that being said, and needless to say, his plea has made him eligible for parole after 25 years. But he's been turned down every time, all the time, of the times, every 2 years. Shortly after his sentencing, a law was passed as to not allow criminals to profit from the publicity of their crimes, more so as to sell their stories to publishers in the form of book, movie, biopic, interviews, or anything of the such. And if there is an instance, the compensation goes to the criminal's victims instead. 1979, an attempt to assassinate Berkowitz was made, which left his neck slashed pretty fucking bad, requiring 50 stitches to close. 1987, Berkowitz found Jesus, as most do in prison, and became the Son of Hope. As I said earlier, Berkowitz has been eligible for parole since he served his 25 years. Every 2 years, he sees the parole board and they turn his ass right back around. Sometimes he doesn't even go. He even wrote him a letter, ironically, stating why he shouldn't even be released. But he's a changed man now. Very religious. Remember what I said about people that get super into something. But he poses no threat. And as of May 2020, his parole hearing was delayed due to COVID. That's the official cut and dry story. Like, that's where, you know, Wikipedia or Murderpedia or whatever, that's where they're going to be like, hey, that's it. But there's a reason I held on to this case to cover close to the last, because for the first time of this season, we have a conspiracy theory on our hands.
Oh, shit.
Either the police department, when they got their guy, they got their guy. There was no more Sons of Sam. They, fuck it. We're done. Mm-hmm. Got him.
Mm-hmm.
We're ready to close this case because it was literally causing a media fucking shit storm. Like, it was just crazy. Like, there was nothing else to read. There was nothing else to hear. There was, like, everywhere you went in New York, it was just Son of Sam this, Son of Sam that. Or, Berkowitz was the fall guy. Hear me out. He was the fall guy for a satanic cult.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pulling some hostile shit, videotaping murders as they happened in New York City. Or simply, he just didn't do it alone. Fuck the cult theory. Fuck the other whatever one. I, for one, do not think it was possible for one person, and don't call me a conspiracy theorist, to do this by himself. I don't think so. You can think what you want to, but I think that the NYPD needed to close this case in time for the mayor, Mayor Beam, to secure the vote for re-election. Not involving politics. But here's what we know. A lot of fingers seem to point at the actual Sons of Sam Carr, the conspiracy. Remember the daughter I talked about, Wheat Carr, the police dispatcher that was like, hey, I know all about Sam, or David. That tip led to the arrest. Well, her father, his name was Sam, and he had two sons. Sons of Sam. John Carr, number one. Although there's not a lot of pictures of him anywhere on the internet, the ones that do exist matches the description that the people saw at the DeMasi and Lomino shooting, because the people that got shot described him. Both victims said he was about 6 feet tall, straight hair, wearing an army-type jacket. David Berkowitz is about 5'8", 5'9", curly hair. Not 6 foot, not straight hair, not none of that. So... And while we're on the topic of John, he was vicariously mentioned in the Breslin letter. The part where he mentioned all of the nicknames, one of them being, quote-unquote, John Wheaties. Ironically, in the Sons of Sam documentary on Netflix, he was described just like David Berkowitz. Quiet, strange, no friends. Kids in high school called him Wheaties because of Wheat Carr. If you read the letters after the fact with some gathered information throughout the previous two parts of this series that I'm so over at this point, implement some context clues like there's a guy named Sam and he had sons. Here, you know what? Let's dissect a section of one of the letters that the Son of Sam left. It's in the last five phrases of the, I think it's the first letter. It may be the second letter. There's only two. But actually, there's more than two, but whatever. Like, in the two main ones. The phrase is, quote, keep digging, drive on, think positive, get off your butts, knock on coffins, unquote. Now, I didn't do this by myself. Investigative journalist Maury Terry was there first. But even if I heard the story, I knew this could not be the job of one person. And those phrases, after the fact, never made it to the public. And the fact that the killer, or killers now, because I think by now I've convinced you that it's possible, hear me out, possible that there was more than one shooter. The killer made sure that that letter made it to the news because he sent it directly to the newspaper. They were going to post it. They were going to post it. They had no choice. Fucking Son of Sam shit was everywhere. Not only does the entire city know about the Son of Sam, but the entire nation. And at this point, the entire world. You can't unsee it at this point. But also, the person that needs to see it can also see it. So I'll give you, you know, the same thing Maury Terry did in the breakdown of these phrases. We're done with this, you know, case as far as, you know, research purposes go. But if you want to hear my crazy crackpot theories, that's going to be on our Patreon. So the phrase, knock on coffins. Berkowitz lived on Pine Street. Coffins are particularly made out of pine. Get off your butts. Berkowitz lived off of Ashboro Avenue. Think positive. To think means to use your head. Positive means to do what's right. So head right. It sounds like directions. Head right, get off on Ashboro Avenue, knock on Pine Street. It goes deeper than that. It goes so much deeper than that. And it was a struggle to just not launch off on so many tangents while I was reading the script. Because, like, as I was writing the script, I was like, no, there's no way he did this one thing to do this. And then there was, like, this thing about German Shepherds getting killed. And then, like, going down to Utermeyer Park. And, like, I don't know if you've ever watched the... I don't think you would care to... I've watched that documentary on Netflix probably about six times. But every time I watch it, I go to sleep. And I don't mean to. It's just what happens. You know, I fall asleep just fine to true crime shit. And I wake up to that one still being on. Like, I have a problem with that. There's no way. There's no way. There's no case that's that long. That's just like, I go to sleep on episode two and I wake up and it's still episode two. Like, no. No.
Are you trying to convince me?
Hey, I'm trying to convince you because, like, no one believes me. I'm like, bro, try and watch this shit. It's so long. Like, but I like it. Don't get me wrong. The Sons of Sam documentary on Netflix is gas. But, like, there's no way you can watch it in one sitting. There's no way. We are going to do a live for the Forensic Files 2 premiere on July something. So I think we'll do that on Instagram. I'm done as far as David Berkowitz, as far as the season, because, like, three parts, bro, the guy was a piece of shit. Like, on paper, he did the shit. He confessed to it. He got 25 years of life for every single crime. And, like, my man's just like, I'm changed. And obviously he has not, because, like, he's still in jail. But there is a conspiracy out there about it. And if you want to hear me rant about it, because, like, I'm not going to do it in this episode. This episode is probably already an hour long. And I spent most of it talking about shit that we already talked about. Check out our Patreon. We're going to do a live stream for the Forensic Files thing. July 11th, I believe. At around 10 o'clock. Blood and Firewater on Instagram, BFW Pod Squad on Snapchat and Twitter. Other than that, stay alert, stay alive, and it's stay dry because it's like storming in South Carolina for some reason. I feel sick. You feel sick?
No, I'm okay. I appreciate you caring.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy-